Just like any industry, the need for new customers is a high priority. As more states legalize different uses for marijuana, just how are purveyors of marijuana finding new markets? This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton sits down with a beat reporter who covers the business of pot. And that discussion starts now.
Hello, and thanks again for listening. Pot, it's what's for breakfast, maybe afternoon tea. Get it? It's high tea. Okay, that's only slightly a well-formed joke. Middle-aged Palo Alto housewives are opening a marijuana-infused tea company. It's meant to coincide with next year's legalization of recreational marijuana in California, and it's not alone. This week, we're looking at marijuana market opportunities and state regulators. Part two of my chat with Scott Lucas. He covers the business of marijuana for San Francisco Magazine.
You know, not all of it is psychotropic, right? Mm-hmm. I know that I have occasional eczema, and mm-hmm. I've used a cannabinoid salve. It takes a couple of days, but it's just as effective as anything my dermatologist has given me. So what other things are you seeing like that? I mean, are there other applications that you have seen just doing your coverage?
There's various kind of libido enhancements that I have seen. There's topical creams that are sort of, as you mentioned, those kind of things.
Right, yeah.
You know, I think the big difference that I'm seeing is change in form factor. So the way that you get the cannabis from the plant to the person, those start to change.
I see.
People who don't want to roll a joint.
Maybe. Right, right.
All these sort of different ways that you can get the drug into your system.
Delivery methods. Right on.
I think that's a big change.
I always hear that edibles are kind of take them with a grain of salt, so to speak.
That's been my experience, too. I think things are changing. They're getting better. I think generally, almost, I wouldn't say universally, but close to universally, the stories that I hear of people's first times with edibles are not so great. Couch lock.
Right.
Gotcha. The whole day. You overdose.
Yeah, totally.
It's hard to know how to regulate how much you're taking for an initial consumer.
Okay.
And so this goes to like the lowering barriers to entry. How do you get the easiest way for a person who's not familiar with this to take this?
Okay.
And they're working on it.
You said the word regulate. So let's pivot
sure.
a little bit. Okay.
Sure.
Let's talk about regulation of the industry. Are we looking at an effective framework that's in place or is it still also evolving?
It's evolving, but it's close to its final evolution in the state of California. So there's two tracks. One is the state track where state regulators are still finishing the touches on recreational regulations. And also sort of how the medical space regulations interact with those two. That gets into a whole sort of boring, complicated topic.
Yeah, boring but important.
The major takeaway, I think, is that it's legal to do everything up to, but not including selling marijuana in the state of California at this point, by state law.
Right.
That'll change relatively soon, but relative in Sacramento time, not relative in Silicon Valley time.
Yeah, so, right. Yeah, two different warp speeds.
That's right. Sacramento doesn't move fast and break things, right?
That's very true.
The other problem then that you've got, or the other consideration, is the federal government.
Is there any groundswell to push back? Are there PACs, political action committees, coming together? Have you seen anything as far as organizing, bracing, or is it just mostly kind of like, well, this may happen, so let's just, you know, keep it on our mind?
More the second case. One interesting story at the local level, though, is that the city of Oakland is considering putting together a public bank. Mm. And what that would do is allow banking services to be accessed by the cannabis industry in the city of Oakland and potentially in the Bay Area as a whole.
Right.
That's an interesting kind of conversation that's unfolding right now. At the Oakland City Council, we're waiting to hear a report back from city staff as to the feasibility, if they could do that. So it's a lot of ifs. It's if when the report gets written, they'll know if it's feasible. Once they know it's feasible, they might think about establishing it.
Right.
It's a long way down, but it's an interesting proposal. It's worth paying attention to.
10 years ago in Los Angeles, the bank, quote unquote bank, was two guys at the door holding an Uzi.
Yeah. It still is in a lot of places, unfortunately.
It's very cash-based.
Harborside, the biggest dispensary in Oakland, does $10 to $20 million in cash every year.
It's dangerous. So you talked about the bank. Are there other security issues? We're talking about, as this conversation goes, I'm listening to a maturing market.
That's correct.
And they're bracing with the realities of running a business, right?
That's correct.
And they're facing down Sacramento, and they're facing down all the regulations that could come their way that they have to brace for,
That's
right?
correct.
Let's talk a little bit about working in these places.
Sure.
But I haven't been in one, but I do know they have evolved, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what is a trend maybe you've seen among some of the higher-end physical brick-and-mortar places?
Yeah, you know, they look more and more like a high-end coffee shop or you know, even the better example of that is, and you're a little bit older than me, so maybe this will work.
I'm a lot older, but thank you.
Think about what the sex industry might have looked like before Good Vibrations opened.
Right.
Right?
That's a good one.
Yeah. The cannabis space is sort of just post Good Vibes opening. They're not 10, 20 years
right.
after. They're a year or two.
Okay,
after.
Well, that worked.
That's where it worked really well for the mm-hmm. sex toy industry. Mm-hmm. I think that's a pretty good model. Demystifying, destigmatizing, making it a normal, accepted thing that's not sleazy, that's not weird, that's mm-hmm. not dangerous. Part of that is very hard for the cannabis space because, as you say, there's muscle at the door.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get rid of that quite yet, mm-hmm. but they're doing many good things.
Scott, you've thrown a lot of words at this industry, really well-written words, really well-sourced lists. What's your interest? Where did you come to this? Was it a random assignment from an editor back years ago, or was it something that you're personally interested in? I mean, maybe there's a personal story.
Sure. You know, the personal story for me around cannabis is one that I think a lot of people have. It's a common kind of story. Somebody who used in college thought it was fine and something that was totally acceptable. I went to Cal and, you know, in the dorms, that's mm-hmm. a normal thing to do. And when I graduated, I said, yeah, maybe not for me, you know,
right.
not no big reason to get away from it, just something that sort of drifted away.
Mm-hmm.
Here I am kind of 10 years later saying, oh, maybe this is something to integrate back into your life in a controlled, normalized, regulated space. There's a lot of people like me who are frankly wimps, who when the space is kind of a gray market or a black market,
mm-hmm.
are not going to want to go into it.
Right.
Or it's going to be a little bit too much.
A little sketch.
A little sketch. I can handle a little sketch, but why? You know, I can go
right.
get a bottle of wine. I can get a bottle of white
exactly.
wine and have that. Who cares?
Right.
You know, as the industry gets less and less sketch, I think more and more people who are sort of where I am are coming into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that became sort of my interest, is how to sort of mainstream, quote-unquote, consumers get into this space.
I got a little bit off my notes, but I want to circle back on one thing that you said earlier. And it goes back to the market segmentation and the product mm-hmm. segmentation. And that is the creativity strain
mm-hmm.
that was used in one of the products that you'd mentioned. And then I was remembering that I have a couple of authors on who wrote a book called Stealing Fire. And their book is largely about microdosing and other things to boost productivity.
Sure.
Right? Are you seeing or have you any anecdotes about creativity when it comes to this?
So I really should not tell this story. So this is just between you and me and the listeners.
Fair enough.
My wife works at a tech startup, which she'll go unnamed. I had a big basket of products one day from various people that I, because as I said earlier, I'm not a big user, that I just, it would be a lifetime supply for me.
Right.
It was just way too much. And I said, I got to get rid of this stuff. What am I going to do? It was a Friday afternoon. I walked into her office where there were about 10 or 12 people, a lot of computer programmers there.
Yeah.
Maybe they were having a beer after work kind of thing. It was 5 or 6 in the evening. And I said, I put it down on the table and I said, I'm going to turn away. You know, if this stays here, it stays here. If this doesn't stay here, it doesn't stay here. Supposedly, the next week at work, people were very focused, very productive, very creative.
Hey.
So, you know.
It's anecdotal, but it's still evidence.
All's well that ends well.
Okay, Scott, you mentioned Oakland there for a second. We have all heard of Oaksterdam. I live in Oakland, by the way, and I've seen the green crosses on a lot of buildings.
That's right.
Wasn't it just a few years ago there was Girl Scout cookies?
That's right.
What was some of the backstory on that, and is there anything else coming out of
it? So Girl Scout Cookies was a really big clone-only strain that sort of took the Bay Area by storm a few years ago.
Right.
And it's an example of sort of the higher knowledge product. You have to know a fair amount about cannabis, and you have to be pretty invested in it before you know this is the strain to go to, this is what I want. It's the equivalent of like a cult cab, say in Napa.
Mm-hmm.
It's
okay.
A Screaming Eagle kind
right.
of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Dark Heart Nursery, who are the people who make it, have also now, in the last few years, released a line of vape pens under this Alchemy brand, they call it, which are lower dose. They're not pushing a lot of that information ahead to the consumer about, you know, this is the strain, this is the that. It's easy to get into.
I see. Okay. No information overload.
No.
Just kind of like, I kind of want to try this, but I don't want to freak out.
And there you go.
There you go.
Nope. No.
This is for you.
This is for you. No paralysis by analysis.
Right on. Okay.
And it's a big pivot from sort of where Girl Scout cookies were previously. And that's a good example of how the industry is changing, moving towards something that's like a more entry-level product,
right,
easier
on.
For people to get into.
Yeah, well it's a maturing market, like we said, maturing segment.
It is growing.
Well done. Scott, thanks for coming in. That was fun.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That was Scott Lucas. He covers the business of marijuana for San Francisco Magazine. This week's show is four segments on the state of the marijuana industry.
two on the marketplace, and two on state regulators. For links to Scott's recent articles and other marijuana industry resources, such as from the state regulators, check out kgoradio.com/techonomics. Just look for the article that accompanies this week's show. They're all in there. And you can also get podcast links, too. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.